all about lifestyle, relationships, cause, and get. From Cassie to the bird.
From Cassie to the bird.
Yeah, we're back at Black Life. You heard from Cassie to the Burbs. Everywhere you go, it's Black Life, baby. It's Friday afternoon, and in the studio, I've got the ever lovely Ville Marie. How are you doing, Speed Queen?
Well, and you?
I'm very good.
I hear
you're
a bit out of breath running up the stairs, yeah.
Running up the stairs was a lot harder than I thought it would be, especially after doing the JP Morgan run yesterday.
But what was the hard part to me? Sure, the running or the whiskey?
Or the food.
It was beer, not whiskey. It was beer. So what happened
beer.
We ran the race, right? And afterwards, I couldn't find any water, but there was beer.
So
I was thirsty, you know. What was I going to do? But I didn't do too badly, actually.
You did your personal best, you were saying. 20 minutes?
I did it in 42 minutes, which is not great, I admit.
Not shabby at all.
But it's not shabby, especially because, you know, I've been doing Body Take lately, so I haven't been running for about 2 or 3 weeks, because Body Take can be quite tough.
Oh, okay.
Basically, you do one 20-minute workout in... Well, one workout in 20 minutes, but that workout is the same as doing a whole week's worth of weightlifting. You get strapped up to these electronic devices, and then you do things like squats and
wow,
dumbbell
okay.
curls and all sorts of things.
Body take, you say?
Pickies for us.
Yeah, I've got some pics that I've put sure. that.
No,
that
no, you should upload videos, pictures.
Yeah,
you know, you can always
as well. But we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks from now. Noisy doing what?
When you squat.
I'm always noisy when I squat.
Ville Marie, hi there, my dear. How are you?
Hello. It sounds like we're all running. I went for a run the first time this morning in I don't know how long.
Okay.
Mine was maybe a K.
Oh, come on.
I just
you look
did
like
it.
You could do 10, like without a sweat.
No. I'm still, you know, after Clinton would know. We'll introduce him now. But after breaking this foot, it's not the easiest thing in the world.
Is it still painful?
Yeah, it's a mission.
I don't feel it while running. I feel it 2 days later.
Okay.
That's the problem.
I guess you kind of always will, though, when it comes to you, like body aches and pains, you know?
Look, I mean, I got injured last year, December.
Where?
My toe. Someone crushed it by mistake.
Oh, I remember.
At a wedding. And I had open...
A big lady.
I had sandals.
Stepped on your toe in heels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've just completed the 50-kilometer Om Di Dam this past weekend.
That's
a
lot.
And I think after 25, 30 Ks, I can start feeling that, oops.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
so what do you
something.
Do? How do you get past that?
Look, I mean, you just got to keep running. Much like... any ultra marathon, you want to go through pains and cramps, and you've just got to keep at it.
I guess that's the philosophy of running.
Eventually something else.
Sorry. I suppose that's the philosophy of running, which is such a good exercise to do to help you with anything in life. The fact that you will feel pain no matter how fit you are at a certain point, but it's a mental thing because it's not about your body carrying you through any sort of ultra marathon. It's actually your mind.
All of us go through pain. The guy that wins, I mean, most of them collapse when they finish. They're so tired. That's how fast they're running. But you take the guys that are coming in right at the end because they're spending so much time on the road, the impact. So all of us, I mean, there were over 3,000 of us running on Saturday. We all go through some sort of pain. And some people just opt out. But I ran pretty well. I mean, I did a 4:57, which was not too shabby. So preps are going well for comrades.
The one thing I heard, which is a philosophy I've lived by since, was John Smith once said, "We're going into the last World Cup we won. He had a niggle, you know, he had a pain, and he says you always play with pain."
Yeah,
but the winners are the ones who can overcome it, and that's the philosophy of life. Nothing, no circumstances are absolutely perfect.
No, for sure.
But you actually have to get through it. Speaking of which, hey guys, how you doing? We've got great guests in the studio. Ville Marie.
Yeah, we've got Clinton. I mean, I haven't seen you for a while. We even
exchanged
numbers
Clinton?
Again. Clinton is from. He's also, I mean, talented in so many things. He does so much. I'm going to give a quick intro.
Yeah, go
okay.
ahead.
Please
Superbike
do
magazine, Superbike mm-hmm. school.
Superbike
right?
magazine is what, the editor?
Yeah, you own it, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, okay.
And then Isle of Man.
What's
those
Isle of
three
Man?
Stand out.
Yeah, I did the Isle of Man and I do tours now.
Oh, yes, and tours, bike tours.
Lovely.
Oh, tours to Isle of Man, sorry, yeah, I mean...
Oh, tours to Isle of Man.
Yeah.
All right, okay, because I thought maybe you owned Isle of Man. I thought,
yeah.
Wow, I wish.
No, but he also raced it. I think, were you...
2010, I went and did the race there, yeah.
But I mean,
motorbike
Clinton,
race, right?
How many South Africans actually... have raced Isle of Man? Because this is an elite race, and it's a dangerous. I mean, every year someone dies there.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. Every year 2 to 3 people die, and only about 85 people enter. So the odds are not good.
Yes. Yeah. And you raced it. What made you decide to go do that?
I rode motorbikes or raced motorbikes my whole life, and I just didn't want to end my racing career with not wanting to do that, or not doing the Ironman. I always wanted to do it. It was a dream of mine, and I kind of didn't tell my wife exactly what it was about.
And, actually, can you tell us what it's about? Because I don't know what this
is. You don't know Isle of Man?
What's a danger about?
No, I don't know Isle of Man. Is it on Channel O? Is it on MTV?
It's a super sport.
Yeah, once a year, it's a race where guys take super bikes. You do it either on a 600 motorcycle
in
or
Ireland.
A 1,000. And it's a little island just off the English between Scotland and between Ireland and the UK. It's a small little island.
Mm-hmm.
And
how long is the race?
It's 60 kilometers, one lap. So okay. It's all on little thin English roads.
How many laps?
The one race is 6 laps, and the other one, so it's 300 kilometers, and the other one is four laps.
And what makes it so dangerous? I mean, 3 die out of 80. That's quite a high number.
Is that every year?
Every year, on average.
Wow.
Okay. So,
well, I think it's not making the turn. That bit is the dangerous part.
But yeah. I mean, you know, you look at something like F1 or the superbikes. Those things are considered so safe. I mean, often they say that if you're in one of those F1 cars, you're safer than you are when you're on the roads. So, I mean, I would assume that maybe the safety measures taken for Isle of Man are quite high, but yet there's 3 people dying.
Yeah, if I can explain, like a track like Isle of Man.
Yeah.
Around every corner, if you get a corner wrong, there's like kitty litter and a big runoff with grass and stuff.
Yeah,
And it's a long time. You'll stop sliding or whatever before you hit anything.
Okay.
At the Isle of Man, it's on public roads.
Sure.
So and it's narrow public roads.
Yes.
So imagine if you had to have a race with superbikes from here to Sandton, then to Randburg, and then back here through all these little back roads. That's what the Isle of Man is.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So, but in terms of safety, I mean, have the officials, the race officials, not improved that safety in terms of creating, when the race happens, safety features like you would find on a racetrack?
Okay, you can't.
You can't.
It's impossible to Michel.
Okay.
I mean, imagine like Clinton was saying now, if I can, Clinton,
yeah,
like
you can't move
going
buildings.
To Sandton. Yeah, you can't move buildings and bridges. And they put in as best they can, like hay bales and, you know, wherever they can. But there's runoffs, there's drop-offs, it's public road. But you choose to go there. Isn't there a selection process?
Yeah, I must tell you, it's one of the oldest races in the history of motorcycle racing. I think it's got its origins back in 1903 or something. So it's been run every year, and the only time when it stopped was like in the Second World War. So for like 2 years. So it's a very traditional race.
Yeah.
But if you can imagine how quick bikes were in 1903, to what they are doing now.
Yes.
I mean, average lap time around the track is 130 miles an hour. Now the fastest guys. Which is the average
miles an hour is about 100 and
about 200 you say
220 kilometers an hour average.
Wow. So Clint, at age 100 you'll be skydiving.
Maybe not.
That's 209 kilometers an hour
average.
And that's an average
hitting.
So that's almost not tapping off,
slowing down, and wow.
Yeah. I mean,
almost as fast as you,
No, that's not one I'm interested in doing.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm still when I heard Clinton was doing, I thought it's not your personality, you know, to be you're responsible. You're a responsible person. So when you go do that, it's like that's for insane people.
But I think it's like you like the running.
Yeah, a lot of people think we're crazy.
You need to do Comrades or you need to do the London Marathon or something like that. Like if you're
just say you've done it.
Yeah, you need to tick the
box.
Yeah.
Well, Clinton, how old are you now? Because you're not racing anymore.
No, I'm 45 now.
Oh, getting younger.
Oh, no.
You look like you're 35. I'm not saying that because you're a hot, sexy man. Because I'm totally hetero. I'm not trying to hit on you. I'm just saying for the ladies. Yeah, yeah.
But you're going to make him very nervous.
I know,
now.
He's getting so nervous. I'm an actor. That doesn't mean like, you know, I'm that kind of way inclined. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Oh, no, there's the actor
not me.
Thing going.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, people think that. But tell me something, Clinton. How did you get into motorbiking? And how did you also get to a point where you thought you needed to create a magazine like Superbike Mag?
Okay, well, let me start with the first question.
Yeah.
My dad was into motorbikes, so at the age of 7, I got my first little bike, and I think by the time I was 18, I think I'd had like 9 motorbikes. So It was something from my dad, and I just loved it. And I'm here with a bucky, and I've got a little small bike.
I saw that small bike outside there.
When I leave here, I'm going to take my little one to go practice on the off-road track. So.
Okay.
He wants him to race superbikes. I mean, tar, not dirt.
I like him doing road bikes, but he only likes the jumping motorbikes. So.
He wants to do those stunts.
So now we're going to go do jumping motorbikes. He's 8 years old.
He's 8. Wow. Okay.
And then from there, your love for bikes, how did that evolve into something that was more of a business?
Yeah, so my whole life, I did a corporate job, worked for Goodyear, but on the sideline, I was always training guys at racetracks and stuff, and taking much what Wilmery does as well, with guys taking them to racetracks, just teaching people how to ride better. And friends of mine actually had a magazine called Two Wheels, and I was doing some of the stunts and the rides for them for the photo shoots and stuff, and the guys from Superbike, it's a magazine that's been in this country for 17 years, approached me and asked what I'd like to do a bit of editing and stuff for them. And from there it started, and a few years later they sold the rest of the company to me. And that's it.
And Superbike is international as well. Where? I mean, I'm not even sure. Is it everywhere?
It's in the UK.
Yeah.
All right. Although they are now going off the magazine side and they're going web-based thing only.
Okay.
And... but we are in Thailand and somewhere else and South Africa. I don't know where the fourth place is.
And I mean, but this magazine, because you guys know, it's not easy to keep magazines going.
Well,
Monobisi would know.
Experts in all things print and media can tell
Black
us. Hello,
Monobisi.
Nice for you to join us again.
BLAQ.
Halfway through the show. How are you doing, buddy?
Love the hat.
Hello to my beautiful guests.
Love the hat.
How are you,
just
man?
Ignore this team. How are you guys doing? I saw the little bike in the...
For you, BC. We just got a short one for you.
Thanks. I saw Vilmarie's Ducati as well. No pressure, eh?
Beautiful, hey?
Yeah. You know how Vilmarie rolls.
Funny, she gets a bike, but I've asked her since day one, since I've known her, say, Vilmarie, can I kasseblief a bike grey?
I introduced you.
Even a tricycle. I haven't even got a tricycle from this lady.
Sure.
These guys are horrible. They have both come for training.
I've got my learners. Hello.
I introduced him to, Arnold, Triumph. Yeah. He messed up that relationship solid somehow.
Ah. Wait. Clint, can I be honest, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't give away advertising, can you?
No.
Exactly.
But he doesn't know.
So how now do I give away my...
I dare you.
Let's name and shame.
Tell Clinton what you were proposing, and he'll tell you straight, it's not going to work.
So this was the deal, right, Clint? And you must tell me if I'm wrong, okay? I'm a man of my word. If I'm wrong, I'll admit it.
Right?
But not on air or not to Vilmarie and to Misha. So I will not admit anything to these two, right?
It's admitted.
But here's the deal. So they wanted to give us like a bike, right?
Yeah.
We don't keep the bike. So they, for as long as they advertise with us, it advertise in inverted commas, we'll get to ride their bike. But at the end, we must give it back.
That's a rubbish deal.
He wanted to keep it.
Thank you. Is that the kind of deal?
So he thinks he can keep the motorbike.
That's not a deal.
Must be his...
Afterwards. You understand? So no one just gives...
but hang on a second. Can I interject?
Did Mini give them...
I might not have a magazine, but I'm someone who knows something about media. The cost of advertising in a magazine, a single page spread, is around... what, 50,000?
No, that's retail. That's not cost.
What do you mean?
Biking industry, it's about 10-ish, in that region.
Okay, well, if you get
10 magazine ads, Indians on your
if you get 10 magazine ads, that's the bike then, isn't it? So
okay, but
I don't understand.
Let's
why
keep
you're
quiet.
It back.
Let's now listen to a neutral party, like
an editor,
an owner,
right,
and let him explain why that doesn't work.
Look, let me just tell you, I'm definitely on the spot, but the biking industry is so much smaller than what people actually think it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, like the car budgets, they would have like 20 times the budget that BMW in South Africa. If you take their car advertising spend opposed to what the bike advertising spend, it would be maybe 5%.
Sure.
And so when you get an outside person like yourselves here going to, say, let's use Triumph as an example.
Yeah.
Their total advertising budget for the year might be 100 or 150,000 rand. So
if that much.
If that. So they can't really take per annum. Yeah. So they wouldn't be able to take a bike and then just give it to someone. Yeah. So that's
because that bike after a year has still got that value. It's appreciated by a little bit, but that magazine's gone.
Say it would have, say a bike costs 100,000 rand, they would import it, say, for about 70,000, and they would write it off at 2% per month over 12 months. So it would say 70,000 minus 18% or whatever, or 24% at the end of the.
Yeah, but who pays the cost of our printing?
No, but there needs to be an exchange of value to both. But you can't just take a bike after a year's advertising and then sell it.
Well, and yeah, then, and then you
make, hang on, then you make your cost back for printing and more.
No, I disagree with that. I'm with you. The main aim of advertising is so that you share your product with consumers. That when consumers see your product, then
they buy.
Then they buy it. So the value of you giving them vis-a-vis of what they're giving you.
But yours have an expiry date on
it. I'm sure I can't afford him, but he needs to work for me.
You must never get a magazine, you go broke. The thing is,
I have
right,
one.
And this is the thing. I mean, I'm in the TV industry. So, you know, we have the same things where a brand wants to sponsor a car and then say, put your car in your show for a while so people can see it. You get all the associated brand goodwill.
Right.
People see it, actually the product at work. They get all that value, which is, I mean, a lot more actually than if you just went out and had a someone on a bike and door-to-door sales. And they get a lot of sales from that. But they sometimes expect that at the end of it, well, thanks for playing, can we get our car back or our bike back? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
In fact, I think that's why our industry in many ways is not growing.
Because it won't.
If you look at the rest of the world internationally, you'll find that if there's a sponsorship deal when it comes to cars and bikes, they will usually, and this is how it actually works, especially when it comes to cars, they will give somebody a car, if it's a celebrity endorsement, let's say, and then they'll pay them millions of dollars to drive that car.
And endorse
it. Understand that the endorsement value is actually much greater than the value of that car, because you're going to write that off as marketing costs anyway.
But do they take that car back or not?
They don't ever take it back.
No. It's only in South Africa where El Cheapos. And I mean, the value of, for example, like you're saying, it benefits me nothing to drive their bike. And the places I go to with their bike, for me, far outweighs what any marketing budget could ever produce.
Wait,
ever.
Hosan.
Hey?
Having said that, let's say then they take their bike back after a year, right? And everyone saw you on a Triumph, and next year Harley comes in and says, hey, take our Harley. What is that going to do for actually their brand? Because what it's going to say is,
you
had a Triumph, and now he's got a better bike.
Yeah, brand slut. I'm from Pretoria.
I'm impressed that you picked that up, because that's a valid thing. Loyalty is a big thing. And Clinton...
Perception.
Yeah, but...
But anyway, going back to Clinton.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, if you've got one person in South Africa, let's choose a person. Say if you put Steve Hoffmeyer, maybe he's not the right person.
You just have to choose Steve Hoffmeyer.
Just here with Gareth. Quite an interesting
podcast. So you choose... Choose Steve Hoffmeyer, you put him on a GS, okay? And that's what a lot of Afrikaners ride. Or put him on a Harley.
Yeah. You've lost the black market there. No black people ever buy Harley again.
But
the biggest market. It's emerging.
He's obviously a celebrity within that population group. Is everyone going to go out and buy
Kurt Darren, maybe. Let's go with Kurt Darren.
Okay, let's go to Kurt Darren.
That's fucked him now, big time. Okay.
Look, I think that people will associate the goodwill that someone like Kurt Darren has, his name, and the fact that he's got admirers, and he's an inspirational brand, if you will, because we look at him and go, he is someone to admire. He's a role model in society. And if he has got a Harley, it means a Harley is the kind of bike that I must actually buy when I'm thinking of getting a bike.
An aspiring brand. Yeah.
It's an aspiring brand.
It's associating with someone
you want. So it's very important. And I think what you raised here is quite important as well. The kind of people you get to push your brand is very important, because when someone is pushing your brand, you don't want to alienate another market because of the person. And I think that we sometimes have to be careful in terms of getting celebrities that are a bit too controversial with endorsements. However, having said that, a little bit of controversy is not a bad thing. I remember when Gareth himself had an Audi sponsorship and he was caught speeding, and Audi immediately took the car back. I thought that wasn't a good idea. I think what Audi should have done is said, we can't blame Gareth for driving so fast in our car because the car is amazingly comfortable.
But we will reprimand
him. No. I think that's
but
the wrong one.
Reprimand.
Hello,
exactly.
Hello,
no,
hello.
Gareth
has never had an endorsement from Audi.
Oh, what car was it?
It was his own car. Evoque, the one like the one you drive, you know,
it's a very fast car.
Yeah, Rina's coming to fix things. Yeah, messing up.
That's an example. That's an example, and that happens in South Africa where someone has done that.
Bro actually had a car accident with the Volvo.
Yeah, which happens, right?
Yeah, which happens. But they didn't take their
DJ
car.
Smoo, they took the Audi back from DJ Smoo.
Yeah,
right?
They took the Audi back. Yeah, I'd also take it from DJ Smoo.
I wonder if you went on Forbes magazine cover with that one. But anyway, About Superbike magazine, what is your readership like in this country? The figures.
We ABC'd at about 8,500 our last ABC'd. So, but if you consider how big the biking industry is, there's about 350,000 registered motorcycles currently in South Africa. But the Superbike side of that is obviously smaller, because that includes the 350 includes scooters, delivery bikes, old bikes, adventure bikes.
So I missed that now. How many? What's your readership now? 20?
8,500.
Oh, 8,500.
That's brilliant, by the way.
No, you wouldn't.
And your
what is yours,
BC? How are your demographics going?
What is yours?
We're not talking about
ABC official. I'm on 16,500.
Okay.
It's quite a big
circulation.
Okay.
My readership is about 100,000+, maybe just under 200,000.
Subscriptions?
Subscriptions, we got 7,500.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Nice. Congrats.
I bought 2 subscriptions, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
He bought it. He wants his money back.
Yeah, no. I want my money back from you, actually.
Clinton's left a nice superbike. It's just
and
off
I
the
know
print
why
now.
I'm not
right?
coming back
lying
on the
on
cover.
The
but
so Clinton, how do you make money? Like, this should be me and Clinton's conversation. You guys should actually just keep quiet.
Okay.
And you should actually... You know,
switch
let the media
the
guys talk.
Switch off the mics.
Talk to the latecomer. Yeah, switch him off.
The runners. You're both running, but I don't see any weight loss.
Talk,
anyway.
We're waiting. You're
Quentin, Clint.
I'm going to get back to you with that one.
So, like, how are you finding the industry at the moment?
No, it's tough, right? It's, in the past, a person could always cover the print ball almost with your the sales of the magazine. We're not quite there yet, and we're doing it through advertising sales.
Mm.
So you've outsourced your advertising?
No, we're small, because we're a small magazine. There's only 4 of us that work at it, so I go out personally and go and try and get most of the advertising.
Really, eh?
Because, yeah, so you guys should support the magazine.
And in terms of, like, the uptake from, I suppose, you know, biking has always predominantly been known as white. I mean, let's not hide the fact.
This
right?
will always yeah, come
unless you're a delivery Clinton, boy for McDonald's.
The race
Clinton
card,
is
yeah.
pro for black. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's not about whether he's pro for black or not. But I think Monabisi is raising a point that is a fact, right?
But let me tell you something. Sorry, it is changing for sure.
It is changing, no doubt.
I think it's probably 65. Black riders nowadays?
No way.
Let's welcome you officially.
I was going to say now, welcome Beverly. Yeah. Sorry,
hello Beverly.
Let's welcome Beverly. Please introduce Beverly,
yes,
Rosemary.
Please.
Properly.
This is Beverly, but we're going to talk about to Beverly about something else, but she's got the knowledge. Go for it.
Definitely, I find that there is a big swing around, and I'd say if you take the black bike riders, huge yeah. industry at this stage.
Okay. And you say that, Beverly, because what do you do in the
how do you
world?
Base it? Like, who are you? You, Beverly, because like,
yeah. that's what the come on. I can imagine listening, like, okay, Beverly, who
I'm
are you?
I'm a Facebook stalker at the moment.
Okay,
we're doing a campaign, and I literally have been looking for bikers and bike clubs.
Okay.
And as I say, the black biking industry is massive in this country.
Okay, so apart from being a Facebook stalker, you're a researcher, I take it.
No, I'm not.
What do you do?
We're just doing a charity run.
Okay.
Sponsored by Superbike magazine.
Well, when you look at those figures, that in historically a market that was dominated by a white market, and
definitely
now it's 65%, and we're just hitting the tip of the iceberg. You've got 65% consumers of motorbikes being black. How do you think that changes when it comes to the media and the advertising of bikes?
It will change it big time. I just want
to
say,
yes, I think it.
Yeah, I mean, Clinton, we've seen that for a while now. With a training academy that's changed. Black people have in the last 2-3 years, my percentage has changed, and it's awesome to see. I don't know about yours.
We run days, say on average we get 100 to 120 people attending a track day. I would say a good quarter of that is new black riders starting to ride.
Yeah.
Just going back to, earlier to what you guys were saying with the percentages, I'm not sure if it's quite up to 65.
Quite that, but that's what I'm picking
but
up on.
But if you just look at the roads, there is a huge increase in the amount of black riders on bikes. And for instance, on the 18th of April, we are running a day just for black eyes, and that is at Midvale. And it's called the Midvale Desperados Track Day Draw. And last year we had over 1,000 people. So it's over 1,000 bikers. I mean,
I was going to say, I saw all the pics of that. Thanks for the invite. Am I not? It's because I'm white.
Sorry,
because you're white.
No, you don't crack it, Bill Murray.
But we had helicopter rides, and it's quite a different day for us because the guys are there with those 3 Series BMWs where the guys are spinning, and we had a helicopter.
Donuts.
But and we had a superbike race against a superbike, a supercar against a superbike and stuff. So it's a real
jaw.
It's a jaw, but you know, all of us want to try and get into the black market, but how to do it? Like, I do rider training. As I said, only about 20-25% of the guys coming to my school are the black guys. Okay, but how do we get to the guys where they know it's important to do rider training? You know, and that's the thing that we're slowly trying to get right with doing a black day only at Midvale.
But not.
It's definitely, from my side, if I look at the support, that there's a lot of them, like anything, who are responsible. This morning when I went to Ducati to pick up the Diavel, one of my clients actually recognized us when we walked in, myself and my mom, for example. Oh, I did training by you. So, and I mean, he's busy, he's buying a Monster now. But he's responsible because he went, you know, he's starting with a Monster, to give you an idea. He's not just going, panigale, off I go.
Yeah.
So,
is that
like,
a pasta dish? You know, black truffles?
Talking to the mic, Tomisha.
Yes, please. Can you both talk into the mic?
What's a panigale?
A panigale is like the superbike.
Of superbikes.
Yes.
Okay. You got to speak to people like they don't know these things sometimes, Marie. Okay?
I'm sorry. But it was nice for me to see that. So, like anything, white people, black people, some are responsible, some are not. It is an education process. I did see, I don't know if you saw the Mzansi magazine, that they tried to
bring a...
Yes. And they couldn't make it after the first issue.
No, they brought out a second issue. I've seen
it. They did. They attempted. They had a DJ Spoo who doesn't even ride. I don't even know that DJ Spoo rides a bike. But, for me, you know.
You're very critical on other magazines, you know.
No, I'm not, actually. I'm just critical.
Competitive.
Just. But, Clint, you know, obviously, if you're seeing the rise within the black bikers, every week I can tell you we're safely burying a rider.
Yeah, I was actually.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
That's across the board.
Like for me, I know if I didn't go to Vilmarie school, and this is the only punt I'll ever punt for Vilmarie, is that if I didn't have some form of coaching or training, you know, my first bike was a Blade. You know, needless to say,
don't
I came
call that
off
a Cressida?
It.
Don't they call that a Cressida? The black guys. If you got a Cressida.
Yeah, a Cressida. Yeah.
If you got a CBR 600, they call it a Corolla. And if you got a 5-blade, it's a Cressida.
Yeah. So, like, you know, obviously there's training issues that we obviously all know about. But how are you adapting, let's say, your business model to, for example, the growing bikers? I mean, yes, there's the Midvale once a year type of thing. You know, is the magazine world adapting to the change? And is Superbike magazine adapting to, like, the kind of bikers and riders that we are having?
He wants a center spread. Do a center spread shoot.
Even your content. I mean, is your content representing the growth or the difference in biking and even the different, you know, biking clubs?
Yeah, for sure. Look, we've just started a thing now where we, you know, in South Africa, there's a big culture of the guys having this patch on the back of, I don't know if you've seen the bikes.
Yes, on the back of the biker jacket.
And Bev, you've actually been part of a club. That is a very, very sacred jacket that the guys,
jacket,
right?
Yes. But you also, what Clinton's magazine also mainly covers is more the racing world, not so much the social bike inside.
We do road tests of new bikes and models and stuff. And
it's not so, you're not covering that much on the
we
social.
We don't do the rally side, no.
So it's not the social, it's all the racing guys.
But so I think what might help as an idea, if you thought of maybe getting a black biker who can ride, on your magazine.
Yes, we've had Sydney York, for sure. He's done
we've
that.
We've had Wilmarie.
Clinton's done, I mean, you did advanced training for Audi with, what was his name? Philip.
Yes, Philip Kekana.
Yeah, a brilliant driver as well. So, I mean, how many of them can ride?
But again,
that can ride and write.
I think maybe what might help is getting a writer and teaching him how to ride, and then take
teaching
it from
him
there,
how to race. That's what you need to do, is get them on the racetrack. Yeah. So your grassroots.
Although the readers, hey, quite often like to have input from someone that is not so professional on the bike. You know, take our good and popular Top Gear's been. I mean, those guys, yes, they can drive, but I mean, James May is not one of the top drivers. No. Yet people like hearing his
viewpoint.
Yeah,
you don't
all have to be professional and racing riders.
I mean, yeah, if you get Superbike, just so the listeners understand, so they'll get a good knowledge of new bikes, what it's about, what's good about it, what's not good about it. Am I right in saying that? If you buy Superbike.
So we try and cover all things motorcycling. So at the back, we have all the racing news about international and local stuff. We then try and do an adventure ride thing. The newest craze is cruiser rider training. So we've always got something on about a Harley or a Victory, and every now and then a Triumph. The other Triumph is quite sporty and adventure bikes. And then in the first part of the magazine, we try and just cover all the latest things, the news around the world and the latest models.
But now, from what I'm picking up, Bev, is that obviously the social riding part is, if we talk emerging black riders, is predominantly social.
Predominantly social,
and yet the magazine is probably yielded towards professional riding, for lack of a better word.
Those guys all want to have a motorcycle, so those guys need to read something that lets them know what bike they should go and buy.
And to get the info from experts, because remember, you do experts, and I mean, who all does your test drives for you? Yourself?
Because it's an international franchise, so we've got guys around the world that ride. Yeah.
So it's a good viewpoint all over, you know, on bikes that you need. It's not nonsense.
On that note, I'd like us to take a musical break. This is a song that Clinton himself chose. It's Every Breath You Take by the
Stalker.
Police.
Stalker. When he gets the button, just hold on.
Got a bit of a playback issue here, so I'm going to have to put it somewhere else. All right, let's see what we can do here. Moving it along.
Can we fire Tumisho, please?
It's pink, Tumisho. How can you miss it?
No, the thing is, we're having a problem with the play out on my side here. So I'm just going to have to put it on another.
Where's Duncan?
Place.
No, but he's leaving.
Yeah, that's us. We're back. Every step you take, I'll be watching. Clint, you know that Sting actually said that he wrote that song from the viewpoint of a stalker.
Yeah, who were you stalking?
I know.
I mean, we asked your favorite song, and that one's the one that came up.
Look, it was my favorite song, and you caught me unawares. But definitely as a kid, I've got some good memories with that, being a young teenager.
Good.
Take us through one.
Close dancing.
Oh, one of those. Matric dance.
Yeah.
So ideally, he was a stalker.
Yeah, exactly. But then if you're a teenager and the song was popular, Clint, well, you did tell us you're 45. I mean, this came out. Sting left the Police in 1983, I think, and became a solo artist. So this is probably from like 82, 81.
Well, yeah, I'm doing the maths now.
You couldn't have been a teenager.
All I know is I was two.
Yeah, I just started. 83, I became a teenager.
No, okay, all right. I'm there with you, buddy. I was there too, you know. Although I wasn't a teenager yet, but I was like, I had teenager tendencies. But now I want to talk about the Paws and Claws breakfast run that's happening over the weekend. Tell us a bit about that, Beverly.
All right. What it is, it's a fundraiser for charities, needy charities. We're starting with animal welfare charities that we support in this year. We're just talking about maybe it'll become an annual thing. Superbike magazine. I phoned Clinton. I said, help. I've never done this. I need your help. And he stepped up and said, we'll sponsor and help out.
But this is cats and dogs, this one.
This is for animals. I've been involved with the animal shelters where I hand rear orphaned animals for them. So,
and when you talk about animals, as Vilmarie said, it's domesticated animals, your cats and your dogs.
Cats and dogs on this one, yes. It'll be cats and dogs where their claw goes into the communities. It's community-led animal welfare. They're in seven of the West Rand townships where they go in and assist.
And how can the general public, anyone who's listening right now, assist you from a point of view of paws and claws, even if they're not taking part in the breakfast run tomorrow?
If they don't want to do the ride, they're welcome to do a donation. They can come through and have a look, see what's on. We're going to have quite a few displays on their wonderful prizes sponsored.
On the website?
No, we don't have it on a website.
Where do you have it? Where can they find you?
On Facebook under Ride for a Reason.
Oh, okay. So what is it on Facebook? Paws and Claws on Facebook?
Ride for a Reason is what
we call it. Ride for a Reason on Facebook. Okay, so go to Ride for a Reason on Facebook and check out what's happening with the Paws and Claws Breakfast Run, as well as just continuous donations. If people want to make it, they can go through there,
right? They can come through, donate some food. Animals always need to eat. Monday, I dropped off 600 kilos of food for them.
That's
drove
amazing.
Out of the parking lot and discovered it'll last for 3 days.
And then if people want to adopt...
Wait. Let me get that. 600 kilos of food lasts how long?
Three days in the animal shelter for the animals that are...
How many animals are there?
There are thousands. Remember, we are also trying to educate people to sterilize their animals to stop them breeding. And that is...
But you know, it upsets me because people are so quick and easy to get pets these days and they don't look after them, like, for example, sterilizing.
Sterilization,
like you're saying, that's the first thing. Whether male or female, the male is the one that's doing the
damage. Don't go there.
Just think about where these dogs are. The guys are poor and they're hardly feeding themselves. So how are they still going
to
spend money to have
that.
Their... And that's where...
But that's what it is. It's an education to go in. And this is what the charities are doing, is they're going in, they're trying to sterilize, treat these animals, medication. And not only the animals, Claw is looking after people, the child-headed households. Mm.
But tomorrow is specifically for...
Tomorrow
them.
Yeah. We're raising on both sides. I'm sure big portion of the Claw collection, because we link in two charities, the Claw collection will go to food parcels, which will then go into the impoverished areas. The sick, the elderly, and as I say, child-headed households, loads and loads of them.
What I found interesting when I saw that, Clinton, is that you're involved with it. So, I mean, you said earlier Superbike is sponsoring. How? What are you guys...
Look, we're just the media partner, and we're trying to get the message out there. So
okay. This
day, tomorrow, is with Motormate. It's one of the guys that do selling of products.
Okay.
And rider gear. So we're trying to get as many bikers there as we can, and just to make people aware of it.
Okay. So, I mean, where do we start? I mean, I'm also going.
Okay, Motormate Suzuki. It's at Rivonia Crossing 2.
Yeah.
In Achter Road, where the Barnyard Theatre is, we're starting from that parking lot.
From Rivonia Barnyard?
It's just in the parking lot of Rivonia Barnyard.
Yeah. Okay.
There will be a music rig there to entertain people. There'll be a lot of prizes. A lot of guys have stepped forward and sponsored fantastic prizes. So we'll be raffling tickets at 50 Rand a ticket to win those prizes.
But what time, if we, Rivonia, what time are you, for guys who want to join, what time are we leaving from there?
The mass ride is going to start at 9. So any time from 7:30, the guys can start arriving. And at 9, we'll start with the mass ride. We'll be assisted with by the traffic departments, JMPD, Think Bikes coming on to Marshall. Yeah. Wheels Unlimited will assist with marshalling.
And where's it going?
On the N1, we're heading north through Benskuman, Midrand that way, onto the N14, and then straight through Krugersdorp, and we finish at the shelter. And that'll just be an awareness, just to make people aware of what the animal shelters are about. Adopt, don't shop.
We're going to the shelters. You know how noisy all these bikes are?
You know and how noisy 400 dogs are?
I'm just thinking that's going to...
I like that.
That's going to be... Like, isn't it going to be traumatizing
for them?
It's
going to be like New Year's Eve for them.
I don't know. No, I think they will survive it. I think somehow they will survive it.
They'll get food afterwards.
Yeah, we'll feed them afterwards and appease it. But yes, definitely, as I say, the it's all an education. We are trying to educate the communities on animals.
Yes. And how many people are you guys expecting?
We
hoping for 1,000, eh?
I'm being a bit more optimistic. I'm aiming for 2,000.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting. Well, I can't wait because I'll have my camera and a stunning bike and I'll be taking pics.
if I could just say, you know, I tend to live life with my blinkers on. It's just always all things bike and we're just running around doing bike stuff and bike adverts. But when Beverly came to me with this, and you actually start hearing about the stories that's out there. And I mean, it's right next door to the place that we live and stuff. And there's people and animals in need of our help. And
for sure.
We are hoping that this just opens people's eyes a little bit.
I've had an education.
Awesome.
As whites in South Africa, we are very blinkered.
Privileged.
Not all of us are privileged. Some of us are blinked. I have spent
some wonderful
days in townships.
Mm-hmm.
And my most interesting was the garbage dumps, the people that live on the periphery of society in the rubbish dumps.
The vultures, we call them vultures.
They are the most welcoming, warm people I've ever met. If I ever get to a stage where you've got no food and nowhere to live, perfect place. I have never met such a happy, welcoming community. These mm-hmm. people are super. Came out to offer whatever little they had.
So are people donating food and blankets now with winter coming up?
We'll possibly do something blankets. A bit later on. You got your blanket runs and that do yeah. do that. The main thing at this stage, as I say, is funds for yeah. CLAW, which will be the food parcels that mm-hmm. we can then send into the community, and then for the animals.
Bev, but no, have you? Sorry, Pets. Have you got like pictures and stuff that you guys have done or that we can promote? Because you know, Saturday is funeral day with the duckies, eh? So it's mornings, a bit of a problem.
Now we gotta be out there.
You know, so like at least afternoon we can meet you Nyana for like after tears, you know. But
what do you mean funeral day? Like really
that's
now?
To me, no, just cool Miss Blue Bull okay. territory there.
All right, Miss Blue Bull, what happens is on Saturday mornings, right? That's when most
on Friday
funerals are happening in the black community.
So why would you
so
not
we're always burying. Every Saturday morning, we're going to a funeral.
I'm going to check up with you guys to see where you are on the next month every Saturday.
And it's easy.
I recently learned that it's actually a very big event. In
yeah, there's the after tears, and then you land up.
So it's a celebration, actually.
No, it's just an occurrence. Who died this week? Ah, your uncle. Okay, let's go.
That's right. Oh, my word.
But I mean, no, going back to CLAW, I mean, Pev, sustaining paws and claws. 600 kilos done in 3 days. What then afterwards? I mean,
then you're looking for donations again. Remember, these are NPO. They're all non-profit organizations, yeah? So they all work on funding.
How long have they been around for?
CLAW has been around for a long time. The community-led animal welfare does have a backing from overseas,
okay.
But never enough. You can never have enough funds.
Isn't that amazing? Because I've heard that with a couple of institutions or non-profit organizations where they have international backing. What is, you know, we need to start backing these, and you probably want donations from people ongoing, not once off.
I'm looking for yes. I've got debit orders, you know, to take R100 and say here we go
yes.
is not a problem. So if the guys can fill out debit order forms and give us R100 a month,
I mean, that's
help.
Kind of that's what we should be aiming for, isn't it?
Because we're aiming for that yes. as I say, but because I've complicated it by doing two different charities. What is happening is CLAW has been run out of the community they're in because they're situated in Durban Deep. They've stolen the power. They've stolen the water. Guns are getting held to the staff's heads quite often. There's been a lot of things happening there. So that's why FORA, which is the Friends of Rescue Animals, has stepped up and said to CLAW, we'll host you for now. The vets work out of there. The animals are dropped off there. As much as the lady who heads up CLAW will not leave Durban Deep, she okay. is still in the area because she entertains 300-400 children a weekend.
Wow.
They come to her. That's their one stable meal they get a week. She feeds wow. them. They do art classes. And that is her whole thing, is to educate them on animals and
so
people.
if someone is going to miss tomorrow, and I remember in a month's time I'd like to contribute for example, feeding both. You know,
especially when it comes to the debit order forms. Where
yes,
can we get
where
those?
Can we?
They will be available
on the Facebook page?
I will actually put them up onto their Facebook page. I will have them tomorrow. I'll have them available.
Which is the Paws and Claws Facebook
yes.
page.
On the Ride for a Reason, I'll
Ride
add them on
reason.
That. But
okay.
CLAW and Fora have separate pages that you can actually go in and donate on.
Yeah. I think separate. You need to send us a quick mail or so on it, and we can retweet it.
Some hyperlink
those,
of some
yes,
sort.
Yes, you know,
like
those
that.
Kind of forms for people who want to do those
tremendous.
Donations ongoing.
And as I say, it's the CLAW one will go into a lot more. It is yes. feeding, as I say, feeding the child-headed households. And it's a massive, massive yeah, issue that we need to start addressing. As individuals, that's the only way we can do it.
Yeah,
one at a time, we do what we
can. I'm glad that you guys actually have created a charity that addresses the welfare of animals. But also the welfare of people in those areas.
And educating the people in those areas on...
about animals.
Animal and personal care. Yes, caring for... You know, the most touching thing I saw was a young man who heads up the household. He's probably 14.
Mm-hmm.
Turning around and saying to the elderly gentleman next to him, "I'm getting a food parcel on Friday. Please come over. I will share my food parcel with you."
Wow. That's amazing.
You know, this is a very, very sick old man this 14-year-old child. And I thought that is a very touching thing. It's not, "I'm getting a food parcel. This is all mine."
You know what? If everyone just does, if everyone can do their bit, it'll make such a difference, you know. Because I've even found myself in the past thinking, let's say some organizations who, you know, they have a lot of money, you don't realize just how much they need for what they're doing, and you think, no, they have enough money, let me look elsewhere, or, you know, next time. But every bit, you can't think that if someone is like you're saying now, this company, this nonprofit has an international backing, that by no means mean that they have enough.
Oh no, not at all, not at all.
We need to keep helping.
Helping, yeah. That's the thing, to keep helping. And poverty is a growing thing. It's not getting better.
Hi, Beverly. Serious? No, you can't say that. No, like, I'm very optimistic to hear that. You know, poverty is a growing thing. You're
I think I agree with Beverly.
So will you sit on the back tomorrow and do your bit?
What's happening is, I think we're getting more rich people, but the disparity between the poor and the rich is actually growing.
The gap
far more.
There are a few more rich people, but there are a lot more.
Yeah, I think it is. There's growing unemployment, so there's going to be growing poverty, I suppose, and issues like that.
And the ones who can make a difference mustn't stop.
That's the thing.
I've got a question, right? Like, excuse my ignorance, but how do we as Africa stop begging? You know, I'm sick and tired of begging. Everywhere we go, we're begging for something, you know.
Let's educate. Let's go back to educating. Let's teach people how to
fish, not always give them
absolutely
a fish, right?
I mean, yeah. Claw actually has community gardens where they grow vegetables for the community. Let's do that throughout every community. Teach them to grow that. Teach people how to be entrepreneurs, how to see a job opportunity or business opportunity out of nothing.
BC?
Yeah.
It's like those guys in Alex, you know, like they were sponsored by Pam Golding. So they went to Alexandra and they put in owls and to kill the rats in Alex, right? But little did they know that an owl represents witchcraft.
Well, that's
really?
Culture. Again, we're going back to education.
We have to educate the charity education. Hang on.
A lot of people are superstitious about it.
I think what's important is we also have to educate the people who are being charitable to understand the culture. Of where they're going into.
Okay, culture.
Because it's very important, if you're going to do something like that, before you go in there, is to educate the people to say, okay, we know that culturally this might be the situation with the owl, but this is why we're putting them there to kill the rats. Or maybe find an alternative way of killing the rats.
So start liking the owls.
You know what, BC?
No, never mind.
Now you're going to another place. Okay.
Education,
I think, is very important. And also, I think even more than just education, I think it's a culture. Teaching a culture of... We're becoming a welfare society in South Africa where we are always waiting. Either the government's going to give us a house, a food parcel, or some charity is, or someone must come and do something for me. Do you think that it's also important while we're educating to change the culture of people waiting for that handout and saying, this is how
go
you
and
now
do it.
Go and do it. Have that sense in your mind that I'm only doing this now because I'm down and out, but I have to get to a point where I don't want this anymore. I actually want to get my own thing.
I think to sit there, we all sit in here, we all ate breakfast this morning. You're looking at a group of people that possibly haven't eaten in a week. To them, it's rather just give me because I need right now.
Yes, so that
is what we have to do, is try and build that up. Communities need to come together instead of fighting against each other. Come together. And if you're a bricklayer and you know how to lay bricks, help some guy build his house. You know, instead of sitting waiting for the government to build your house, it's not happening. Yeah. So communities must come together. If you have a business and you having a sterling year, put 10,000 rand into a building fund.
Okay.
And let the guys
But I think the community as well, we need to get to a point where, as a community, when we know that the businessman is going to be giving us some funding for that particular building or house or whatever, there comes a point when we have to start thinking, I must get out of this poverty so that I can not only help myself but can come back and help others.
Exactly. Pay it forward.
And on that note, imagine a world that was that beautiful.
Yeah, Bev, I like the dogs. The cats, I'm not so sure. Ish, cats.
Hey. Oh, cats. I love the cats.
Superstitious?
I love the cats. Yeah,
all right, well, we have to go now, guys. It's been a fantastic show. Thank you for being with us this afternoon. And you can catch this show on our podcast.
Yes.
Just go to cliffcentral.com.
Yes.
And all the podcasts are there. And you can catch this particular show. And make sure that you go to the Facebook page of Claws.
Ride for a Reason.
Ride for a Reason. And join us tomorrow. We're out of here. Here's John Lennon. This is something that you chose, Beverly.
Beverly.
Imagine. Love the song.